This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Come on. We call it the place to be.
Yes, it's the place to be.
Then I shall be.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be podcast.
It is contagious. It is the place to be, and we are live each and every Monday.
To do worse than Josh Richard.
I love how you put it on. Got the only key, know how to turn it on. The way you never on my ear, the only words I wanna hear. Baby, take it slow so we can last long.
Tú eres el imán y yo soy el metal. Me voy acercando y voy a...
Place to Be Nation, welcome to another great episode of the one and only Place to Be podcast. I am your co-host, Justin Zero, coming to you live here on this Monday evening, back in the saddle. Feels like it's been a while, Scott Criscola. We had our Halloween spooktacular a week ago, and here I am with, the power may have been out last weekend, but now I got a light on, I got two TVs going, I got my phone here, I got the computer, everything's fired up, powered up, and we are ready to go.
Yes, we had it was the 5-year anniversary of Sandy last weekend and Sunday, Monday, and it felt like a little baby sister came in or whatever. It was a freaking disaster. The power here flickered a bit, but you were out for what?
Came back on Wednesday morning. From Sunday.
4 days? Yeah. That's crazy. Good evening, JR. Good evening, Place to Be Nation. Welcome to episode 469 of the longest running episodic Gold Bended. And we are back in the saddle. We had a spooktacular episode last week. Very fun episode.
Yeah.
If you had a chance to listen to it, please do.
Get a brand new voices. Fresh faces and voices for our show here. It was cool. It was a nice cornucopia. As some may say, of talent that we don't always or have ever talked to. And it was really cool just kind of taking 20 minutes a piece and going and talking some random stuff and plugging some shows. And hopefully you all went and checked those shows out if you hadn't yet. And then we even got to visit with Kevin Kelly. It's always a good time as well.
Yes. Always good to see Kevin. Always good to see Kevin. Tonight, JR, though, we are continuing the road to Pontiac.
Mm-hmm. Although you wouldn't know it based on the show we watched.
No.
What they've talked about throughout this show. But
yeah, this is the first time that tape date and air date really were a problem. And we'll get to that right now. So tonight, JR, we have Saturday night's main event taped on February 21st, 1987, and aired on Saturday night, March 14th. 1987. So almost an entire month.
Yeah.
And February 21st was 2 weeks after the big heel turn by Andre on the February 7th Superstars. So at the time of the taping, well, we'll get to it as we get into the show.
Mm-hmm.
We are live. We are at, by the way, at, speaking of Pontiac, we're in the same state, but we are at the more venerable Joe Louis Arena in suburban Detroit. Actually, it's in the city of Detroit, home of the Red Wings. Of course, your announcers, Vincent Kennedy McMahon and The Body, Jesse Ventura. It's always a treat now because I feel we'll never see Jesse again.
The Body. You know? Yeah, no, I know. It's a nice treat. We got him, what, like one or two MSGs I think he popped in for, but it's pretty much just been Saturday's Main Events or pay-per-view. So we got a couple coming up here for Jesse. So
yes, no, I'll be very excited. All right, now, on this day live, on the actual date, March 14th, 1987, JR., one half of the roster had a double header. We'll get to that one in a minute. The other half of the roster, relatively close. They were both East Coast.
Mm-hmm.
One roster was at the arena in Baltimore. Your card, C.V. Afi versus the Assassin. There's a doozy of an opener. Jerry Allen against Ron
Bass.
It's
funny because they've already assassinated his career over the last
year. Yeah, pretty much. Mike Rotundo and Dan Spivey, the new U.S. Express, taking on Demolition. George Animal Steel against the Honky Tonk Man. Oh, good. We had to deal with that anyway. Jake the Snake Roberts against King Kong Bundy. Sounds like a familiar match. And the main event, good six-man tag here. Ricky Steamboat, the Junkyard Dog, and Billy Jack Haynes against... Billy Jerk Haynes against your World Wrestling Federation Intercontinental Champion, Randy the Macho Man Savage, King Harley Race, and Hercules. Not as good as the six-man we had at the Garden about a month ago, but not bad probably. Now, the other half of the roster was in the Keystone State during the day, a matinee in Berwick, Pennsylvania, which I've driven through. It's very small. And the evening,
what the fuck
JR,
is that?
16.
Is that like Brad's Berwick? Backyard, Berwick? And that
I know.
It?
It's like, because I remember when my roommate and I at the time went to see Penn State play, we drove through and we drove through Berwick every time. So it's like in the first third of the state of Pennsylvania.
Okay.
Somewhere between, you know, not close to Philly, but
it's near Allentown.
It's west of Allentown.
Okay.
Allentown's like in the northeast corner. Berwick's kind of in the middle as you're heading towards central part of the state, but still like probably a couple hours.
There's an East Berwick as well.
Yes, there is an East Berwick. Yep. But Berwick proper was where they were for the matinee. And then in the evening, 16,943 jammed the Spectrum in Philadelphia. So what's funny, JR, is that if you were living in Philly, you could have put on Prism probably at 8 o'clock for a live house show, and then put this in for the Saturday's Main Event on at night.
There you go. Would have been a
great night of wrestling.
Stocked up night of wrestling.
In the city of brotherly love. Now, televised on the Prism Network.
There's only one brother love I recognize, and that's the man who sang Can Nobody Hold Me Down, produced all those Biggie records, I'm Coming Home.
Seriously?
It's only brother love that I know.
He's going to walk around with a white suit on. And
actually, I guess he said he's not going to do it now because of all this confusion and these comments. Somehow the wrestling fans have been heard, and he will not now go by Brother Love. Bruce Pritchard will remain the only Brother Love out there. So
love you, Puff, but you should have done some homework on that one.
I can't wait till he's going to come in. All right. Brother Love didn't work. I'm going to be Jimmy Hart from now on. I'm going to be J.J. Dillon from now on.
Oliver Humperdinck.
Yes.
So, again, as I mentioned, televised live on the Prism Network. Dick Graham and Ken Resnick on commentary. By the way, Resnick's last appearance as a WWF announcer. This was his last – I don't know what he did. I'm sure he probably – I don't know. Did he go back to AWA? I'm trying to think. He probably did. Included Danny Davis as a guest of Piper's Pit, in which Davis said he had always been a fair referee. Moments later, Roddy Piper brought out referee Joey Morello, who told Davis he sucked. Davis then brought out his own guest, Adrian Adonis, with Jimmy Hart. Piper then began choking Davis and backdropped Adonis over the top to the floor. Adonis was then dragged out of the arena by Gorilla Monsoon and other officials as Piper punched out Davis, saying that's how he wanted to leave Philadelphia. Of course, talking about – it actually sounds like a really good pit.
Yeah, right. That's pretty cool.
Of course, we're talking about Piper and his retirement. More on that on the show later. All right, here's a card. Paul Roma pinned Steve Lombardi at 9:53. Oh, God. Both openers, not that sterling. Butch Reed pinned Dick Slater. Outback Jack pinned Frenchie Martin. Right up your alley. God, that match sounds so bad, doesn't it? Awesome. I don't even like the way it sounds saying it. Outback Jack pinned Frenchie Martin.
Roof.
Dino Bravo pinned SD Jones. Your World Wrestling Federation Tag Team Champions, the Hart Foundation, defeated the Islanders at 18:22. Ooh. When Brett pinned Tama after Davis interfered and reversed Tama's small package attempt, which we pretty much saw at the Garden.
Mm-hmm.
And that match is actually, if you have the Bret Hart The Dungeon Collection Blu-ray, that match is actually on it.
Oh, nice.
So, Tom Zenk defeated Greg Valentine via disqualification. Rick Martel fought Brutus Beefcake to a double countout at 15:35. And in the main event, listen to this main event, your World Wrestling Federation champion Hulk Hogan and the Hot Rod, Roddy Piper, team to defeat Kamala and Paul Orndorff. When Hogan pinned Orndorff after Kamala accidentally hit Orndorff when Hogan moved out of the way. Sounds like actually a pretty good Spectrum show. You might be able to see that floating around somewhere in the information superhighway. Interesting. So that's where the actual roster was on this live evening. March 14th, 1987. Anything else we have at JR before we dive in?
No, I think that's it. We're here. It's the final stop before Mania. Lots of hype on NBC. Open with the quick promos from Hulk Hogan, Andre the Giant, Bobby Heenan, Elizabeth, Hart Foundation, Jake Roberts, and then Vince and Jesse open up the show proper. Jeans with Hulk Hogan talking about tonight's big battle royal where Hogan will have his first confrontation with Andre. Hulk says everyone's asking why he would do this before Mania, but he likes to live in the danger zone and he'll take on Andre wherever he can. And he doesn't care who else is in the ring with him. Gene then chats with the Macho Man and Miss Elizabeth about his match with George Steele tonight. Liz is scared about the match, but Savage cuts her off and says he's psyched up. Gene insinuates that Liz is more than just a manager, and Savage yells at him, threatens Steele, and walks off. Gene says tonight that the rules stipulate that Liz will enter last because if Macho Man loses, Miss Elizabeth will leave with George Steele. And, of course, that is in addition to the Intercontinental title being on the line as well.
That's right.
Then we get to the ring because Randy Savage comes out alone for this super high-stakes match. Jesse says Gene is Rhona Barrett, delving into the private lives of wrestlers. We cut to the back where Gene is with Liz, and George Steele comes in and does his usual nonsense. Back to the ring. Steele comes out. Jesse says he deserves hard time for kidnapping that we saw the last time around. Back to Gene. Liz is still fretting and then heads out to the ring to find out which man she'll be going home with. Liz takes a seat in a big lifeguard chair. Savage attacks Steele before the bell and kicks away at the floor. Savage tries to drag Liz backstage, but Ricky Steamboat shows up and forces them back to ringside. Steele jumps Savage in the ring and pounds away, ramming him from corner to corner before stopping to eat the turnbuckle. Jesse calls Steele stupid and says he belongs in a cage, as Savage knees him in the back to take over. Savage heads up top and hits an axe blow as Liz looks on from her perch. Steele comes back by wrenching the nose and clubbing away and then grabs Savage's arm in his mouth during a clothesline attempt. Steele slams Savage down and eats another buckle and shoves the foam in Macho's face. Steele heads outside and walks Liz down from her seat and tries to talk to her, but Savage jumps him and slams a giant chair on his back. Savage then slides in and wins the match by countout, keeping both his woman and the title. Steele comes in and chucks Savage to the floor, grabs the title as he looks on in confusion. This is fine. I didn't think it was as good as their last night's main event match, but better than the other ones we've seen. Savage really needs to get the fuck out of this feud, though. It's just losing its zip. It just feels... Mm-hmm. It feels so played out. Even Liz is starting to look less sympathetically at Steele. Like, it's just starting to feel awkward now. Like, he's just this creep. It's, you know, it was kind of cute, and, you know, she was a little bit enamored, and now it's just like, all right, I'm kind of done with you. I went one star on it this time around.
Yes, your total runtime, 4.5 minutes. I believe I also gave it a star. Let me shoot ahead here to my engine right here. And I believe I gave it a star as well. And, yes, I did, one star. Yeah, I mean, I thought this feud was over. I totally forgot that they had one more match. I mean, at this point, George Steele is just – he's just out of touch with the rest of the roster. This kind of gimmick isn't flying anymore. The roster's now getting full of, you know, some pretty good workers and some good characters, even heels and baby faces. And so he's just – it's just not his gig anymore.
Yeah.
Plus, I mean, this is like what is – like ninth IC title match in like the last 8 months or something. Seems to get like one IC title shot a month.
I know, right? So, at least make them non-title or something. Like, why do you keep getting these title matches? It's awful. It's so stupid.
It is really.
And Savage beats him every fucking time. It's not like Steele's like sneaking out count out wins or something, you know?
Right. They're all pins except this one, but I mean, they're like all pinfalls practically. Obviously, this was to kind of, you know, set up for 2 weeks from now, and. You know, having Steamboat there was nice, but I mean, really, Savage is. People want to see Savage and Steamboat. They're done with this feud. I would have been happy, like, with a tag, you know, like have Steamboat and. If you're going to have Steel in it, maybe Steel and Steamboat against. Steamboat wrestles later, but I mean, I'll mention I can combine the match. We'll get to that later. I would have combined maybe a match later on in the show and did a tag here. I think that would have been probably pretty cool. And then maybe just added an extra match. We'll get to that. We'll get to what the other half of the card would have been or match would have been in a minute. Yeah, I mean, I get that George Steele is like a novelty. I get it. We've talked about this numerous times, you know, with Kelly on our, you know, on the house shows. I get that he's a gimmick, and I get that, you know, maybe it's something fun for the national audience. But really, we're past this now. Vince needs to kind of change his thinking about these national shows, and start treating them like legit, like using them as exhibitions to a certain extent. Early on, I get that, but shit's too important now. You know, we're 2 weeks away from arguably the biggest show in the history of the company, and you gotta get some plug in this. And I don't think we heard. And we'll talk more about this as we progress, but I don't think we heard the two words WrestleMania 3 together at all on this show.
Yeah, it's only a couple
maybe
times.
Maybe twice.
I mean, the only thing I can think of is just that, I mean, I don't know. I don't know. I mean,
I think
I guess it's trusting the marketing and everything, but yeah, you think that, I mean, the only thing I think of is that we're not seeing ads maybe that ran during the show. I don't know, you know, like maybe... In all the markets, it just kind of adds tagged on to the back of these commercials that are just cut off
maybe
on the network. Unless it is really trusting just their promotion of the pay-per-view outside of the show, and they're still, just, like you said, using this as a kind of like a primer for anyone stumbling across the programming. But it is odd. I mean, is it possible? I'm trying to think if they've hyped other stuff on Signing's Main Event. Like, is it possible as part of the deal with NBC they can't promote, like, other shit?
Nah. I mean, I don't know.
Because I don't remember. Did they promote?
Vince and Ebersol were pretty tight. I don't think why would Ebersol give a shit about a pay-per-view? It's not like he's promoting something on CBS.
But did they promote WrestleMania 2? I don't remember specifically.
Was there another? There wasn't another Science Main Event between the Phoenix 1 and 2, right?
So no, that was
that's
it.
Hard to say. Yeah. The problem was is the template for Science Main Event that they used in these first couple of years probably now is starting to get outgrown, and now they have to kind of treat this show like, you know, a weekend Cindy, except without the squashes, but in the sense of promotion. So maybe they learn after this not to tape these shows too far out in advance. I mean, like I said, this was taped on February 21st. The Andre heel turn was only a couple months old.
But they can plug the commentary in. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like they had to film the stuff at that point. Like, they filmed enough good stuff, like, on this show that could have been, I mean, everything pretty much leads to 3. Like, everything that's here is building to that. So, it's extra weird that they didn't just update the commentary to really plug the show. There's going to be something there. I mean, I know a lot of our listeners that enjoy these shows were avid fans at the time. So I'm just misremembering or you know, maybe we're just not getting the full view of what they were maybe, you know, promoting on TV at the time during commercials. Or also, if anyone knows any of the inner workings, whether it's through, you know, Meltzer or anything like that, of the contract with NBC that maybe didn't allow for them to promote. So I'm curious why. It is very curious.
Yeah, if anybody out there listening has, say, for some weird reason, if you have like the VHS copy, if you taped, I mean, I don't know if the VHS still would be surviving, but if you have a VHS copy of the show, if you taped it that night and you somehow still have it, if you are a meticulous collector like my PIC is with his VHS tapes, if you have it, take a look, throw it in, see what the commercials were. Were they pimping WrestleMania 3? And be honest with you, Gorilla and Jesse, it's not like the rest of the arena was listening.
Right.
So who gives a shit? You're taping it anyway. Why doesn't, you know,
why
don't they just pump it up?
The whole thing is weird.
It's really strange. In any event, the match is shit. Thank God it's only, you know, 4.5 minutes. Savage wins again.
I mean, I get that they were trying to make it to 3 at this point because Steel's been inserted as part of the stuff with Steamboat. So, like, this one's fine. But that has to be it. That just has to be it. It's enough after that.
Yeah, there's no need to. I mean, you want to keep him on some, like, mid-card novelty stuff.
Just I just mean as a player with Savage. This feud started in, like, what, January of 86 or so?
Yeah, this feud is like 14 months old.
Fucking, it's not like they have, I mean, they fought a lot, like, on TV and shit, you know?
Yeah, and Savage won them all. So it's not like, what more does he have to prove to beat this fucking guy? I mean, you know what I'm saying? It's made no sense.
It's enough.
I gave it a star. It's trash. Like you said, I think even the whole Elizabeth thing is totally, once Steamboat got involved, you know, or the Steamboat stuff really kicked in at the end of the 86 and the last Science Main Event, nobody really gave a shit about George Steele and Elizabeth anymore. That went out in the middle of 86. No one cares about that anymore. So I agree that when you said that even Elizabeth's like, all right, enough with the creeper. So your Intercontinental Champion wins by count out. Keeps his title and moves on to an actual legitimate Intercontinental title contender. And of course, in 2 weeks, it will be Randy Savage and Ricky the Dragon Steamboat for the Intercontinental title. And not that you would know that from watching this, but common sense would, I suppose, tell you. So there you go. So Savage wins, and we don't see the last of Savage, though, tonight.
No.
Just let you know that. Tease that. What do we got next, JR, backstage?
Yeah, we go backstage. Mean Gene is with Andre the Giant and Bobby Heenan talking with the Battle Royal. Heenan wants to be at ringside to see Andre toss Hogan, and then kind of reminds us of their story and what they've been through to get to this point. All right, so here we go. We're going to run through the entrance in this big 20-man Battle Royal. First ever on Science Main Event history, right? We haven't had one yet, have we?
Battle Royal? No. No, we haven't.
The entrants are Hulk Hogan, Andre the Giant, Ron Bass, Brian Blair, Jim Brunzel, Axe, Smash. Haku, Tama, Billy Jack Haynes, Hillbilly Jim, Honky Tonk Man, Blackjack Mulligan, Paul Orndorff, Lanny Poffo, Butch Reed, Sika, Nikolai Volkoff, Coco Beware, and Hercules. Anyone on there we haven't talked about yet on the show, Scott? I think we've grabbed everyone, right? We saw Bass already, right?
Yes, we saw Bass. Okay. Yep, bad match.
All right, so I think we've talked about everyone.
Yep, everybody's covered.
All right, big time matchup here on national TV. Bout loaded with names up and down. We get some entrances. Vince and Jesse are setting the stage. Andre gets great heat as he stalks to the ring, and Vince just rips him for what he did, while Jesse defends it as just business. Hogan gets a massive pop as he power walks out with his music blaring. Andre blocks Hogan from getting in the ring, giving us an epic stare down right away. Orndorff attacks Hogan from behind, igniting the match. Everyone starts going to war with a group of guys beating on Hogan until he fights them off. Hulk dumps Honky very easily and then starts fending off all comers. Andre chucks Sika casually as everyone just keeps hammering away. A group tries to gang up on Andre, but that goes to no avail. Andre tosses Haku and then levels Lanny with a headbutt and chucks him, and we see that Lanny was split wide open. Andre continues to dominate as Hogan battles whoever's in his way across the ring. Doctors come out, and Lanny's carted off on a stretcher. His blood is just pouring from his head. It's just disgusting. Vince says we are seeing a brand new Andre out there as Bass gets tossed by Hogan. Andre tosses Mulligan and then levels Axe with a hard headbutt. Hogan dumps Nikolai and then battles with Orndorff as Andre sends Blair flying out as well. The match continues on and comes to a stall when Hogan gets whipped into Andre and we get a huge stare down and get some right hands by Hulk, but the dream match ends quickly as Hulk gets jumped. Hogan eliminates Orndorff, but Andre catches Hulk from behind with a headbutt and then casually just throws him out to huge boos. After a break, Hogan is being shoved back by officials as he's just screaming at Andre from ringside. Andre throws out Brunzel, but everyone left in the match gangs up on Andre and tries to push him out, and eventually they succeed and eliminate him to a big pop. Haku chucks Tama and Hillbilly dishes Axe as things have subtly opened up big time. Smash pushes out Hillbilly, and then Coco dropkicks Butch Reed to the floor, leaving us with our final four of Hercules, Smash, Coco, and Billy Jack Haynes. They pair off, we get some heavy blows until Herc just scoops up Coco and throws him to the floor. Herc and Smash double-team Haynes until Billy Jack ducks a Smash clothesline and sends him out. Haynes works over Herc until Heenan gets on the apron and causes a distraction, allowing Herc to shove him out for the win. This is a really good battle royal. Keeps a crisp pace. The whole story is just focused on Andre and Hogan the whole time. All of the eliminations just about came at their hands when they were in the ring. The Poffo stuff is legendary. It makes Andre look like a monster before WrestleMania. That just the headbutt just tearing him open is just a gross sight. My only complaint here is that Andre probably could have won this. There's no reason for him to be eliminated. It is a cool moment for Hercules, and it puts over Heenan getting a guy a win. But Andre could have had just so much more shine on him heading to Pontiac. I think the only way you could argue this is that you could say Andre only cared about eliminating Hogan and didn't give a shit about the match. So after that, he just kind of whatever. But I think in that case, you could have him just leave, you know? Like, that could have been equally as impressive. He just throws a Hogan and leaves on his own, eliminates himself. But I just didn't see... Like, I know you're trying to get some shine on Herc, and you're trying to, you know, build up his match with Billy Jack. So those are the final two. But I think an Andre win here would have gone even further. Not that he needs any more heat than he has, but I just don't see what you gain by eliminating him.
I agree 100%. Your runtime, 11:16. I gave this, let's see.
I went 3 stars on this.
You went 3 stars. I went 2. I have two things to talk about. One involving Andre and the other involving the announcing.
Yeah.
Number one, I agree with you about Andre. Just have him just mow everybody over.
I mean he pretty much did. He pretty much did. This is the one time I was actually thinking, like, usually when Hogan gets eliminated from these things, he pisses and moans and pulls the guy out. Like, this is one time where maybe he could have helped. Like, it's kind of weird that we just have Andre go out at the hands of everyone else. Like, you know, that just felt weird to me. Like, I know they're all ganging up on him, but he's supposed to be the king of the battle royal. It's just, he's already won a WrestleMania 2 at the battle royal. Like, why not just let him? Yeah, why not just let him win? All right, God, I'm sorry.
Like, you almost think like, no, it's okay. You almost think like they're putting Bobby over more than Andre.
Right.
Like, you have a Bobby guy winning. You know what I'm saying? Like, that was odd. I think Andre should just mow through everybody and won the thing. Number two, I noticed something in this watching this again today, and I never really noticed it before. And now that we've been watching Prime, if you watch the Prime Times from this build and our house shows, I noticed something very interesting. I don't know if it's because it's a regional thing more than a national thing. whenever you hear Gorilla talk about Andre and the heel turn, yeah, he says, oh, I'm disappointed. This is not the Andre I know. But 90% of the time, whenever Gorilla talks about it, he's pretty much blames Bobby for the whole thing.
Yeah.
It's all Bobby's fault. Brainwashed him. You should have stayed away. You know, Andre was a good, honest man. If he wanted a title shot, I'm sure Hulk would have obliged. You didn't have to get in it. It was all Bobby's fault. Every time Gorilla would discuss the genesis of the Andre heel turn, it was always Bobby's fault.
Mm-hmm.
Vince, however, now again, I don't know if this is more because of a national thing. Vince said, and I very distinctly, very vividly today hearing him say, yeah, Bobby's not innocent, but I think Andre was always seething with jealousy, always realizing he was never really the superstar Hogan is. I'm thinking to myself, wow, that's rough. Like Vince, I mean, obviously Vince was, you know, a huge Hogan mark on camera. But, I mean, he pretty much full-blown says that Andre is just the scourge of the earth. Whereas Gorilla, as much as he would say, I'm disappointed in him, and I never expected him to be this weak standing his ground or whatever, he pretty much always blamed Bobby. It's all Bobby's fault. But Vince actually says, you don't know what kind of jealousy sat in Andre all these years. I don't think he ever liked Hogan. That kind of thing.
Right.
Did that surprise you?
No, I think it's important because if it's just Bobby, you're making Andre kind of look like a simpleton that just got connived by this shyster. And the heat is on Bobby instead of Andre, where Andre you almost kind of feel sympathetic for. I think by adding in the thought process that, well, maybe Andre's kind of an asshole. Like, you know, like to me that helps add to the it just helps add to Andre's aura of, okay, this guy isn't just like this dumb giant who got tricked by Heenan into, you know, if you were going to have Andre just go back to being a face after the match, maybe you go that way. You know what I mean? But if you're going to establish him as a top heel for a while, I think you're going to give him a mean streak. You can say maybe that Bobby put, you know, Bobby was the catalyst to make him finally pull the trigger, but I do think it's important to establish that Andre had these thoughts and feelings and maybe is a little bit dark on his own, that it wasn't all Bobby. So I kind of liked it.
Yeah, I'm not saying one's wrong over the other. Not at all. I'm just realizing today that listening to that, I said it's amazing the tone. Now, maybe Gorilla's got to start being told, look, you can't, we got to make Andre a heel. So don't sit here on every primetime and say that he got duped. And sometimes in a lot of ways, and maybe that's because just to fire up their banter on, their banter on primetime because they're the co-hosts. But Gorilla definitely takes a more sympathetic view of it than Vince does, which I found very interesting.
Gorilla's been portrayed as Andre's friend too. Like that's the whole thing.
Right.
So he's almost saying it from like, I can't believe my best friend would do this kind of angle. So he's almost just feeling jilted by his buddy. You know what I mean?
Right. No, I get that. And I think that makes for a good dynamic of the different kinds of philosophies by the announcers when thinking about Andre. Because, you know, remember, Andre's, if you've been a wrestling fan for, you know, if you've been a wrestling fan for your whole life, seeing Andre as a heel is, you know, mind boggling, you know. But I just thought it was very interesting that both play-by-play guys take a different approach. Again, you know, Vince milk toasty babyface announcer just putting over the fact Hogan is the good guy and Andre is a selfish asshole. Whereas Gorilla, ex-wrestler, takes a different approach.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I'm upset. I'm disappointed in Andre. I thought I would expect better of him. But Bobby, it was pretty much you that did it. And if you watch all those prime times leading up to WrestleMania 3, that's pretty much what the tone of it is. And that's fine. Again, I'm not saying one is wrong, one's right. All I'm saying is the philosophies are different between the two main play-by-play guys. And I found that fascinating watching it today at how Vince was. I mean, we know Vince is milquetoasty and all, but, I mean, he was pretty much saying that Andre was a backstabbing scourge of the earth. And but he didn't, you know, he didn't hold Bobby harmless, but he, you know, he called Andre out on his shit, in other words. And that's fine. Puts him over even more. Otherwise, I mean, I thought the Battle Royale was okay. I have no problem with Hercules winning again. I think, as you talk about, that Andre could have been, you know, could have afforded to be put over more. I think this is putting Bobby over more because right now, let's be honest, Jimmy Hart probably is a notch, even though Bobby's involved in more high profile feuds, you know, Jimmy's got gold. The Bobby does not. And we'll get more into, and more will come from Jimmy throughout the year, but we'll get to that. So I think it was more to get Bobby over as like this top, you know, continuing to be the top alpha dog of the manager of the heel managers. And that's why I think Hercules won. Odd last four guys, though. I mean, except for Billy Jerk, because that kind of, you know, fit the, obviously, the feud. Would a babyface winning have done anything different? Like, would you have had Billy? Like, if you were going to have...
No.
You might as well just have had a heel win, right?
Right.
Doesn't really matter. Yeah. Doesn't really matter.
Yeah. No, I mean, it adds... No, and it's, you know, you're trying to build Hark up. I get it. Like, I'm okay with that. That makes sense. It's just... It's just weird that you're establishing Andre as unbeatable machine. He's the king of the battle royal, and then you have him just get thrown out by like six guys. It just, I don't know. I didn't really see the benefit of doing it.
No, like, I didn't either.
Other than really trying to get Herc over. But you could even done something where it came down to Andre and Herc, and maybe Andre just leaves, and you give Herc the win that way. And Andre, then they say after, like, oh, I was only there to eliminate Hogan and make sure the Heenan family won, and then he left. You know, if you want to give Herc some kind of rub, you know, you could have done something like that too.
Right. Exactly.
And other than that, no one else really stood out in this one. By design, it was fine, but it was really just all about Hogan and Andre cleaning house. And I mean, Poffo was the only one who got any kind of additional shining.
Right, and that was probably by accident. So, all right, so there you go. Hercules wins the Battle Royal, but Andre clearly gets the last word on Hogan by easily chucking him. And I like Andre has the best mannerism when he just kind of flaunts his hands at him, like, all right, pick the trash up. I love when Andre does that.
Yeah.
That's awesome. All right. Why don't we take a break?
Okay.
A couple of matches in. Good show so far. We got three matches remaining, but not as much meat in these ones, so I figure we'll take a break now. We do have a title match coming up in a little bit. The Tag Team Championship on the line. But first, let us take a breather and celebrate with Hercules and the family. Because... Red I
love. Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the Pro Wrestling Only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rizzero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlayStation.com, and we offer those to you on three great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the original Place to Be podcast, as well as Main Event, Lucha Afterground, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows, as well as the Our Vantage Point podcast and Jeff Learns Wrestling. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver quick-hit pod blasts on topics old and new.
Over on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, we dive deep inside the wrestling business with a stacked army of experts leading the way. The feed features potpourri shows such as This Week in Wrestling, Greetings from Allentown, Psychology is Dead, Puro Potpourri, Stacy and Elliot's Bogus Journey, and the Military Industrial Suplex. We also have shows that focus intently on certain topics like Letters from Center Stage, Space City, and NWA Classics On Demand Adventure, Through the Years, Strong Style History, Strong Style Story, and Mount Olympus. Plus, the feed has the full archives of legendary shows like Titans of Wrestling, Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, and much more. And on our popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, PTBN Dadcast, Go Home in a Box, NBA Team, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, Geek and Sassy, and Imaginary Stories podcasts.
You can find all of these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to all of our feeds on iTunes, and while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others available on PlacementNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlacementNation.com/Amazon when shopping online, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlacementNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly, longtime announcer with the WWE, now the voice of Ring of Honor Wrestling. No better place to be than right here on the Place to Be podcast. Make sure you tune in every week.
All right, Nation, we are back taking a look at the March 1987 Saturday Night's main event. We saw Hercules win that Battle Royal. He tries to climb the ladder of the World Wrestling Federation. And you could say it's one of those famous ladders, like that one on, it was a QVC. Remember the guy fell off and almost killed himself?
Yes.
Or you could say it's like Jacob's Ladder, where you want to throw up when you're working out on it. And speaking of Jacob's Ladder, Scott, that is a song playing underneath us here tonight by good old Huey Lewis and his news. And that does transition us right into Scott Criscolo's Pop Culture Corner.
Thank you, JR. And yes, Jacob's Ladder, Huey Lewis and the News. It might be one of their last top 40 hits. Was your number one song as the newest Hot 100 Billboard poll came out on this date. It was a Saturday, of course, March 14th, 1987. At number two, from the Disney movie An American Tale, wink, wink, one of JR's favorites, Somewhere Out There.
Oh, I thought it was on
by
the
Linda
same.
Ronstadt. Whatever. They're all the same. Linda Ronstadt and James Ingram. Number three, Little Janet, Janet Jackson, Let's Wait a While. Number four, Living on a Prayer, Bon Jovi, of course, from the Red Hot album of 1986-87, Slippery When Wet. Number five, Lean on Me by Club Nouveau. We be jammin'. Number six, Little Bruce Hornsby in the Range with Mandolin Rain. At number seven, Respect Yourself by Bruce Willis. Forgot he sang something. Not as good as Party All the Time by Eddie Murphy, but
no.
But it worked out. Anyway, that was number seven.
And the Body Rules isn't on here.
I know, right?
Body Rules.
But JR, at number eight is one of yours and my favorite songs, literally of all time. And it would end up becoming a future theme song to a WrestleMania. Think you can guess what it is?
I'm coming home, I'm brother.
No, that didn't come out in 1987. But you're right, though. It is one of our favorite WrestleMania themes, but that's not it. No.
No, that would be
that would be awesome if it was in the top 10.
That would be Big Time by Peter Gabriel, I'm guessing.
Correct, sir. Okay. Of course, the theme to WrestleMania 22. Big Time. I'm on my way, I'm making it. At number eight. Number nine, You Got It All by the Jets. Not the New York Jets. Although I bet you they could sing They Got It All. They're not looking too bad right now. Mm-hmm. And at number 10, Starship Nothing's Gonna Stop Us Now, which of course people think is one of the worst songs ever made, which I think broke the band up. I think Paul Kantner, God rest his soul, quit after that piece of shit. But anyway, there's your top 10 with Jacob's Ladder by Huey Lewis in the News, your number one song this week, March 14th, 1987. All right, JR, let's go to the theater, for the day before, that Friday, March 13th. Just three movies this week, but all actually made a decent amount of money. We begin with a horror film. It made $5.92 million. It is called Evil Dead 2. Of course, that's Mr. Ash. Bruce Campbell.
Let's pull that up here. The film begins with a simplified recap of events of the first film. Ash Williams and his girlfriend Linda take a romantic vacation to a seemingly abandoned cabin in the woods. While in the cabin, Ash plays a tape of archaeologist Raymond Nobe, the cabin's previous inhabitant, reciting passages from the Necronomicon Ex Mortis, which he discovered during an archaeological dig. Recorded incantation unleashes an evil force that kills and later possesses Linda, turning her into a deadite. Ash is then forced to decapitate his girlfriend with a shovel and bury her near the cabin. Starring Bruce Campbell, Sarah Berry, Dan Hicks, Ted Raimi, Lou Hancock. That's about it.
Okay. And, of course, that was one of the more known horror movie series at the time. All right. Number two for the weekend, it made a pretty good amount of money, $22.8 million, a comedy titled Raising Arizona. An interesting note about this movie, but go ahead, Jerry.
You have an interesting note, huh?
I do. I'll tell you in a minute.
Okay. Convenience store robber Herbert I. High McDonough and police officer Edwina Ed, meet after she takes mugshots of the recidivist. What the fuck is a recidivist?
I've heard of it. I don't know what it is.
An active person repeating an undesirable behavior after they have either experienced the negative consequences or that behavior, or have been trained to extinguish that behavior. Okay, so it's like someone who backslides, basically. With continued visits, High learns that Ed's fiance has left her. High proposes to her after her last release in prison, and the two get married and move to a desert mobile home, and High gets a job in a machine shop. They have children, but they want to have children, but Ed is infertile, and they cannot adopt because of High's criminal record. Starring Nicolas Cage, Holly Hunter, John Goodman, William Forsythe, Randall Tex Cobb, Sam McMurray, amongst others. And what's your fun fact?
My sister walked out in the middle of this movie because she thought it was that bad.
Oh, really?
Yes, and I've heard that this movie is actually fairly atrocious. So even though it made that kind of money, it was pretty fucking terrible. So my sister actually walked out in the middle of it. And the number one movie of the weekend, an action film, it made $34.5 million. It is called Heat. This is not the movie Heat that some people may think of. That didn't come out for another 8 years, but this is a movie called Heat.
All right. This is a woman in Las Vegas bar, annoyed by a flirtatious drunk. Her date, a milquetoast named Osgood, wants to do something about it. The woman, Dee Dee, begs him not to, but when the drunk turns... the drunk turns mean. Osgood challenges him to step outside. To Dee Dee's astonishment, Osgood wins the fight and even gets a tough-looking drunk to apologize. Next morning, it turns out that the drunk is Nick Escalante, known to his friends as Mex, who had been hired to make Osgood look tough in his lady's eyes. Starring Burt Reynolds, Karen Young, Peter McNichol, Howard Hesseman, our buddy from Ahead of the Glass, Deborah Rush, Joe Klecko is in this, by the way.
Yes, there you go.
Joe Mescolo, Neil Berry, and that's about it. You have any fun facts about this one?
And Joe Klecko.
Yeah.
Joe Klecko was in, was it Hooper? He must be in I think he's been in at least three Burt Reynolds movies. They must be friends. No, I have no, but of course I didn't want anyone to get confused with the Heat that came out in 1995, the one that of course had Robert De Niro and Al Pacino, and I think Val Kilmer was in it too. So this is a different Heat. Mm-hmm. There you go. That was it. It was your top three movies that were released the day before March 13th, 1987. All right. We are in the middle of March, sir. Which means that it is the NCAA basketball tournament. And
time for the shock wall.
Time for the shock wall, bitch. It was the first and second round going on that weekend. So here were the teams that advanced to the Sweet 16, which would end, and that would be the following weekend. The East Regional, your four teams. Number one, North Carolina. Number two, Syracuse. Number five, Notre Dame. And number six, Florida. They advanced to the regionals in the East, which would be at the Brendan Byrne Arena in East Rutherford, New Jersey. Any notable upsets? Nope, I don't see any. Well, Purdue was the 3 seed, mm-hmm. and Florida beat them by 19 in the second round. And then Notre Dame beat the 4 seed TCU by one. In the Southeast Regional, your teams that advanced, the number 1 seed, the Hoyas of Georgetown, who defeated Bucknell and then Ohio State. The number 2 seed, Alabama, who defeated North Carolina A&T and New Orleans. The number 5 seed, Kansas, who beat Houston and then Southwest Missouri State. And your number 6 seed in the Southwest Regional, Southeast Regional, your Friars of Providence.
Dun, 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 dun.
Billy D, you know, of course, sir.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Delray Brooks. Moving on. They beat UAB.
Deviant Vagabond, Rick Pitino, leading the squad.
That's right. I didn't want to mention him, but I'm glad you did.
That's when he's clean. He didn't get dirty till later.
No, he didn't get dirty yet. No. So you were a 6 seed, and you beat UAB 90-68 in the first round,
mm-hmm.
and then beat Austin Peay in overtime, 90-87. Austin
Suck
Peay
it, had Austin ups- Peay. Bunch of midgets playing basketball.
Yes. Austin Peay had upset number 3 Illinois in the second round. So PC would take on Alabama, and Georgetown will play Kansas in the regional semis in Louisville, Kentucky. Mm-hmm. In the Midwest Regional, the teams that advanced, the number 1 seed, Indiana, who actually beat Fairfield in the first round. Fairfield won the MAC that year. Number 3, DePaul. Number 5, Duke. And number 10, LSU. LSU, our man Andrew Reich's guy there, Dale Brown, had upset 2nd-seeded Temple in the second round. So those four teams moved on to
Good.
Cincinnati.
Fuck you, Dan McGinn, stupid Temple.
That's right. And finally, the West Regional, which would be in Seattle. Number 1 UNLV, not Grandmama. It's a couple years before. Armand Gilliam was on that team. The number 2 seed, Iowa. The 6 seed, Oklahoma. And the 12 seed, Wyoming, would go to the regionals in Seattle at the Kingdome. So our next show, JR, we'll let you know who won the 1987 NCAA tournament.
Okay. Can't All wait right, to find so, out. Pins and needles.
Yeah. Did the Friars get the run? Did they do it? Did they do it? We'll see. In the NBA on this Saturday night, 6 games, no locals. Nets, Knicks, Celtics, Lakers, all off. The high scorer of the evening was Larry Nance, who's, of course, kid plays for the Lakers. He had 32 and 14 rebounds, but the Suns lost to San Antonio 121 to 108. So that was it in the NBA. And in the NHL, there were 9 games on tap. A lot of our little Vintage Vault teams were in it, JR. Our Bruins played to a 4-4 tie with Chicago. Let us see. Who else? Mr. D'Amato's Rangers beat Pittsburgh in overtime 3-2. And Kelly's Flames lost in Toronto 6-4.
Good.
And there is your pop culture report. So let us head back to and were they at Joe Louis, by the way? I see the Red Wings were on the road on that night, which is funny since we were at there on February 21st, and that's where tonight's Saints main event is. But the Red Wings were on the road on this night.
Mm-hmm.
Checking it, curious to see if they were home. They were not. They defeated Minnesota in Minnesota. So there's your pop culture report.
What if back Gordon Bombay was playing Joe. For the North Stars in that one?
Who?
Gordon Bombay.
Oh, yes, Gordon Bombay. That's right. Okay.
I mean, Gene back is to, back. Yes, he's backstage with Andre the Giant and Bobby Heenan. Andre says it took 8 men to eliminate him, but only 1 giant to eliminate Hogan. Bobby says they won the Battle Royal and backs up Andre's points. It says Hogan hid from Andre the entire match. Gene then talks to Jake the Snake Roberts about his match coming up here. Jake says Damian is really hungry tonight and they're ready for the big man. Gene hints that King Kong Bundy could squash Damian, but Jake says they'll always come out on top. And that is our next match, Jake the Snake taking on King Kong Bundy, a rematch from what we saw back in February, Scott, at MSG. Mm-hmm. Jake comes out with Damian looking very focused on the big challenge. Vince talks about Damian eating Bundy. Bundy pounds away to start, but Jake squeezes free and lands a shot of his own. Vince says that Bundy's afraid of Damian, but Jake thinks Bundy could eat the snake. Or I should say Jesse says that. Jake dodges another blow, but Bundy is able to grab the arm and work it over. Jesse comments about Jake's impressive and deceiving height as two men lock into a test of strength. Bundy leverages Jake to the mat and gets a pair of near falls until Jake kicks free. Bundy clubs away some more and grabs a tight front face lock. Jake broke the hold with a knee lift and then punches Bundy to the mat. Bundy grabs a sack and speeds off, but Jake chases after him. After a match, Jake lugs Damian back into the ring, but Bundy catches him coming in and kicks away vigorously. Bundy lays in some more power offense, but whiffs on an avalanche and collapses to the mat. Both were slow to get up there, but Jake strikes first, landing a series of jabs and a clothesline to drop Bundy. Jake goes for the sack, but then knees the referee by accident when he gets in the way, drawing the DQ. Bundy jumps Jake and beats on a snake, but Jake dodges an elbow drop and drops Bundy with a DDT to a big pop, and caps things off by unleashing Damian, but Heenan yanks Bundy out of the ring before Jake could throw the snake on him. This is a tick better than MSG, but the ending was real dumb. It really took the steam out, made Jake look weak. Like, why are we protecting Bundy at this point? Like, he's not going to exactly a big-time match at WrestleMania 3. He's pretty much on fumes. Snake is the guy who just turned face. You're hyping him up. He's kind of a Saturday Night's Main Event workhorse in many ways. I just thought it was a real questionable decision. The match was fun, though. And Bundy's doing a good job remaining relevant despite the slide down the card, but I didn't get the finish here at all.
No, I don't either. I gave it a star and a half.
Did I get my grade? I went two stars.
Two stars. Yes, I gave it 1.5. I don't get this either. I did enjoy Jake's promo at the beginning when he says that Damien's about to eat 400 pounds of white meat. I thought that was pretty funny. I thought that was pretty good. I mean, 1 year ago, Bundy was like the man. He was the Andre, the number one contender. He was heading into WrestleMania. Now he's, you know, mid-card fodder. I think when Jake was getting face pops during his match with Savage a few episodes ago, I think the bookers thought maybe they should turn him. And we talked about that when they wrestled, that, you know, who was going to be treated like the baby face and the heel in that match. And obviously the sympathy went towards Jake because Savage is just that good at being a fucking jerk off. So it worked out pretty well. And we've talked about the hierarchy of fan favorites a lot on the show, you know, particularly when we're at the Garden and a lot of guys are there. Now, obviously, Hogan's number one. For a long time, of course, the JYD was number two. Now it seems like some other guys are moving up the ladder at Steamboat. I got to say, as fast as he's become a babyface, I think Jake needs to be on that list even now, as a top three baby face in the company. I mean, the fans digging him now big time. Very impressive that Jake got this much pop so soon after just recently turning babyface.
Yeah. This is super into him. He's really hot right now. And then of course he's embroiled in this thing with Honky Tonk Man after he got his head bashed in. We talked about last month. No, he's really hot, which, you know, I don't know. I just didn't get this one. I really didn't.
No, I don't either.
You know, he's come along a long way. You mentioned the match with Savage where that was kind of like the telltale kind of thing, where you could see maybe where he was headed for the future. He had the abrupt feud with Hogan that gets cut short, and he's just on a rocket ship. I mean, is it possible they're already looking at Jake as someone who maybe they thought is over enough that doesn't need these wins? I mean, could that be the case?
Maybe, but... Again, why are we protecting Bundy? Who gives a shit at this point, really?
Well, at least let Bundy get DQ'd. Like, having Jake, like, snap, it almost looks like he thought he couldn't win, you know, and he just kind of throws the referee aside and whatever. But, yeah, I don't know. Yeah, it was just a weird, and it's not like he was getting fucked with. Like, usually if a guy's going to snap like that and throw the referees because he's frustrated, like, we didn't really get that from Jake. It's not like Heenan kept coming in and guys were interfering and he finally said, fuck it. It's like he just does it. I don't know. It didn't feel well thought out at all for the way they executed it.
No, I agree. It made no sense whatsoever. I don't think it hurt Jake any, but a win here would have been nice. And I mean, the DDT was moderately legit. I mean, Jake kind of slipped out and Andre had, or Bundy had to kind of fall on his own, but that's fine. I mean, you know, Bundy's a big dude, but I didn't understand why didn't Jake just win clean. I don't get it. I mean, why is Bobby still, I mean, is Bobby's guys being protected? I mean, I don't know. Whatever. In any event, Bundy wins by DQ for what reason we still can't figure out. Backstage we go, JR. A little more Mean Gene.
As always, Gene's talking to the Hart Foundation to talk about their first title defense and say Danny Davis will be an official observer at ringside. Davis says he has proven impartiality has made him qualified for this role. We talked about the title change, I believe, last month, right? They were champs in February when we chatted? Okay.
We did.
So the Hart Foundation are the new champions. They are taking on an interesting team here tonight of Tito Santana and Danny Spivey, amazingly enough, still hanging around. Tito and Danny are in the ring. Vince reminds us that Davis was the ref when Tito lost his IC title a year ago as well. That rare Spivey appearance here as he's still hanging around. Spivey controls the anvil with a side headlock early, but Anvil decks him with a clothesline. Spivey reverses a whip and lands an atomic drop. Anvil tags Brett, and Spivey stays hot with a flurry and tagged to Tito, who keeps the pressure on. Spivey comes back and hits a shoulder block for two, but Anvil makes the save. Brett takes over, and the champs go to work with quick tags and double teams, mixing in a nice blend of offense. Anvil drops Spivey across the top rope, and Brett comes in to land some strikes and slingshots Anvil to the ring with a big splash for two. The Harts keep dominating Danny, using great heel tactics to blind the referee from a Spivey tag as well. Spivey eventually dodges a charge, and the champs collide, allowing him to tag Tito. Santana unloads on Hart, Anvil, and even Davis before hitting Hart with a flying forearm. Tito gets the figure four, but Hart hangs on as long as he can until Anvil runs interference, and Davis bops Tito with the megaphone for the win. A really fun TV title match here with great pacing, a hot crowd. The Harts and Davis and the titles have become like a red-hot act out of nowhere. The chemistry and work rate was always there, but this whole new package around them has made them must-see. Like, just everything has just catapulted them. I thought Spivey looked pretty good here. He probably should be used more than he is at this point. Like, we never even see him at MSG. Tito is Tito, and, you know, while him taking the loss seemed questionable on paper, it's like, why not have Spivey to seat the pin? I think it actually continues to build the heat on Davis with him and set up their match coming up. So I thought this made a lot of sense to have Tito eat the loss with the controversial finish. So I went 2.5 on this, Scott. I really enjoyed it.
I did too. I gave it 2 stars. Our Foundation are just on fire right now.
Ever since we said it that time, we questioned it. What are they doing, you know?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it's crazy. It really is how hot they've gotten. And they're just on a different level. It's almost like they were kind of waiting around. And then once they got the belts, they were able to hit the gas.
How much do you attribute that to Davis?
Oh, a lot.
Do you think they get this hot if Davis isn't part of the mix?
No, I think they would have still gotten hot because they're just good workers. And
but as hot, do they get as much instant heat on them? And
no,
yeah, I think they're a little more tepid than they were here. I mean, maybe like on a dream team level, you know what I mean?
Right.
Versus nuclear, like they've become with this whole thing.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think it's pretty awesome how great they've become. And I mean, Tito and Spivey, it's an interesting team. I don't know. I mean, Rotundo probably was gone by now. He wasn't because they were right. – That's odd because maybe he just wasn't there that night because –
Well, Tito had to be here. I think they wanted Tito in the match to push forward the –
Just make it better, yeah.
Push forward the stuff with Davis, stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. And it made for a good match. They're just so hot right now. They were the perfect heel team to take out the Bulldogs. Sadly, I think Davey Boy and Dynamite's just breaking down anyway. But it was time for a new team, and I think they earned their stripes. I think it's a big win for them. They look good, fresh tag team champions. The key now for them is lining up babyface challengers because. Yeah. The problem I felt we had a little bit in 86 with the Bulldogs was really other than the Dream Team, the kind of burned out
Foreign Legion.
We didn't have like some legit babyface contenders for the heel contenders for the Bulldogs. I think we need to spend 1987 really working on some good babyface contenders for the Hart Foundation. Not just because you want some opportunity for you know possible title changes or some intrigue, but just to have some good matches. And obviously on this night live at the Spectrum, the Harts and the Islanders, who we saw last month at the Garden, had a stellar match at the Spectrum on this night live. So we know that there are some babyface teams that are lined up right here. The only fear that the Hart Foundation has right now is The only fear is Demolition. Obviously, they're a pretty hot heel team right now, just getting started, but they have that look that's going to – and I just hope as we continue on that they don't siphon off some of the Hart Foundation's thunder as tag team champions. Because they're a pretty intimidating team. We saw them in the Battle Royal, and we'll see more of them, obviously, throughout the year.
Right.
I just hope that they don't siphon off the Hart's heat and they start to get too tepid, because they've earned this opportunity to lead the tag division. So those are two things about the Hart Foundation. Hopefully we can get them some good babyface contenders and have some good feuds throughout the year to see how long they go. And also, hopefully that Demolition doesn't, siphon off too much heel heat from the Hart Foundation as the top heel team in the company, because they already have that look and they're the kind of team you could see becoming really, really good, and generating a lot of heat. So, but good match here, 5:31 your time, and they retain the tag team titles in a pretty good match. It could have gone for a few more minutes, but obviously, Saturday's main event, you can only do so much. And the Harts look good as they head down to Pontiac for their big six-man tag. I'm sure it was booked at this point with only 2 weeks left.
Right.
They have their big six-man tag with all the people pissed off at Danny Davis. So that works out as well. What do you think of Danny Davis's outfit? It got better as time progressed, but here he's got like these weird short tights and this funny-looking fucking like tuxedo jacket or something.
It was very odd look, yeah.
Yeah, very strange. And of course your, so we all go back to, Mean Gene more always back to Mean Gene.
Always back. He's with Ricky Steamboat. Talk about his match tonight. Gene asks Ricky if he's 100% and the steamer says he's good to go, but it is something he thinks about now in every match. His opponents go for his throat. He'll be breathing hot fire each and every night. And that is our next match as Ricky, the Dragon Steamboat, takes on the Iron Sheik. To wrap things up for us tonight, Iron Sheik and Slick stoically await the Dragon, who charges to the ring and fires up the crowd before the match. Savage shows up and gets on the apron, but then leaves through the crowd and joins the booth. Annoying Vince, Savage says Steamboat can't lace his boots. Sheik punches away, and Steamboat comes back with his speed and drops Sheik with a back suplex. Steamboat punches away as Savage says the Dragon doesn't have what it takes to win the title, and that Sheik isn't in his class either. Steamboat takes Sheik over with a hip toss and grabs a chin lock, but Sheik breaks free and dumps Steamer to the floor. Savage and Jesse say Sheik is messing up by not going after the Dragon. Sheik suplexes Steamer for two and grabs an abdominal stretch, but Steamer breaks free. Steamboat comes back with some chops and slams Sheik and comes off the top with a karate chop for the win, aggravating Savage. The two have a stare down and yell back and forth at each other. Fine match, but all about Savage on commentary, showcasing Dragon for the Intercontinental title match. Just no mention of Mania again here at all. They just kind of talk about an upcoming match, which is so weird. Because in we watched a February MSG where they talked about Mania fucking nonstop, and now here nothing. Odd. I went a star and a half on this to Scott. I enjoyed it. Both the match itself and the entire package with Savage on commentary. So what'd you think of this one?
I gave it 2 stars, actually. I thought it was a fun little sprint. Savage obviously added to it. Savage and Jesse together was pretty cool, actually, and Vince getting beat up was good as well. Not much more here, just to get Steamboat over to prepare for, the big match. More Savage is fine with me, so we get our second look at him. And even here, though, like we talked about the generics of not pumping the show up, just really strange that it's all just like sometime down the line. It's just really weird. I would have assumed that even by February 21st, which again was when this was taped, that match was already set for. I would assume that those were the two matches set for Mania, even at that point. And then maybe the undercard stuff got filled over the coming weeks. I don't know. It just makes no sense.
I mean, MSG, they talked about like almost every match, remember?
Yeah. And that was 2 days later.
No, the February one.
Right. But 2 days later was the MSG House show.
No, yeah, well, yeah, but beyond that, a month later, they're doing commentary for it, obviously. So whatever. It's weird. I mean, we know the card was built because they talked about it pretty much nonstop on MSG. So it just doesn't make any sense. It's really confusing. I'm really curious if there's something more to this, why they're not talking about the biggest show of the year here. I mean, you have a prime window. The only thing I think of is that they just either weren't allowed or just were really just banking on outside promotion and just wanted to focus on just selling. Maybe they thought if they just focus on this show, you get people hooked and they'll tune into the other shows and they'll find out about it there, I guess. I don't know. It's very weird.
It is very weird. And it just, the show was exciting anyway, but, just not mentioning it with 2 weeks to go just really made no sense. Anyway, so there you go. Ricky Steamboat wins, and he's on his way to his big IC title match in 2 weeks. We are not done, though, JR. That was our last match. We got one more very poignant and touching bit of information here.
Yeah, well, first, me and Gene talks to Hulk Hogan about his big title match with Andre. They don't say when it is, but it's coming. Bobby promises the Giant will be champion soon enough. Hogan talks about Andre's whole life being a lie, and after seeing his recent actions tonight, he got to test Andre and now has the spark he needs for their one-on-one match. Like, at this point, they're actively going out of their way, like, not to fucking mention WrestleMania. Like, they're talking about all the matches and everything else, but they still will not just mention it. Gene chats with Roddy Piper now as well, who has announced his retirement after WrestleMania 3. They finally say it. Hanging it up at his peak. Piper talks about giving it his all in Hollywood and how he'll try to be a star there as well. And then we get a special music video tribute to Roddy's career set to My Way by Frank Sinatra. Just a nice piece of business here. Piper is about as emotional as you see him get in one of these interviews. Kind of talks about, you know, how, yeah, he's an asshole, but whatever. The fans have come to love him. And he's going to give it his all out in Hollywood, and he's done with wrestling for now anyway. So I thought this is a good way to end the show.
Oh, I thought it was great. It's just funny, though, that we're supposed to have this poignant video this poignant video tribute, and it's mostly him being a dick.
Yeah, I know.
You know, it was really funny.
Well, that's why everyone loved him. I mean, he was an asshole.
Yeah. Here's a goodbye tribute song while he's shaving Haiti Kid's hair. It's like really.
Well, he did it his
really
way.
Really funny.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's what the point of it was. So, good way to end the show, though.
Yeah.
You can't forget about Piper. And again, they don't even mention Adrian Adonis. He's not even on the show.
Right. No, yeah, they just say he's retiring after WrestleMania. That's it. And that's pretty much the only mention of WrestleMania, like, at all.
Yeah. Let me go to, because I'm curious if he was even in the building. Let me go to,
All right, well, as you do that, I'm going to start teeing up the awards here
for
tonight's show. And as always, we're going to start with the best match of the night. It was a pretty easy choice. I went with the Battle Royal.
Yeah, no, it was. It was most hyped and had the most info. I mean, the tag match was really good, but the Battle Royal had the most important information in it, so, and the most important storyline advancement. Right. So I'll go with the Battle Royal, too.
Cousin Junior, worst match of the night. It always kills me to do this, but I blame Steel 100% to have to give Randy Savage a worst match of the night award. But
I know.
It was the worst match. I mean, it just was. Like, there was nothing else that bad on the show. You agree?
Yeah. No, okay. It's George Steel.
Yeah.
Done with him. There's only so much Savage could do with nothing. It's like shadow boxing.
All right. Next, we have the Hulk Hogan Award for the MVP of the evening. I went with Andre the Giant.
You have to.
Yeah.
Other than, I mean, short of winning the thing, he dominated it, beat up a lot of guys, smashed Poffo's face and chucked Hogan. So the dark matches, all right, so he wasn't even in the building. The dark matches were Demolition defeated the Islanders, Jerry Allen pinned Steve Lombardi, Honky pinned SD Jones, and Kamala pinned Corporal Kirshner. So he wasn't even in the building at that time.
Odd. All right. So Andre gets our Hogan Award. Our Uncle Elmer for the non-MVP of the night goes to – I went with Steel. I thought he was the worst worker of the evening.
Yeah, there's really nothing to discuss. Yeah. No, there's nothing to discuss. He's terrible.
All right. Best moment of the night, I went with Andre headbutting Poffo. I think that's the lasting impression. I remember because I had never really seen this. Saturday's Main Event was one of the few things like in WWF history during this era I hadn't really ever seen much of. By the time I started watching in 90, just it wasn't easy to get your hands on these things. And they had a couple of tapes, the Saturday's Main Event and more Saturday's Main Event, but they were real hard to get. Like, I remember my cousin Matt was finally able to track one down toward the end. But this was one I'd never really seen until they released the Saturday's Main Event DVD in, what was that, 2010 or whatever, maybe 2009, mm-hmm. 2010. And I remember just watching this match and I know exactly where it was. I was playing, PlayStation. This is what the life before kids and podcasting. Wife was asleep. I'm playing PlayStation, and I have the DVD on my laptop, and I'm watching it. And I remember just I had to pause the game. I was just like mesmerized by this moment of Poffo just getting torn open by this. I mean, I just couldn't believe it. Like I was floored by what an awesome match and moment that was. So to me, that's always the one that has stood with me, and I think it just makes Andre look like such a fucking badass going into Mania.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt. I would add an honorable mention to him just chucking Hogan and then doing the hand gesture, the you know, like you're trash. Yeah. But the headbutt's pretty badass. I don't think we can deny that to give it its own space.
All right, the Arcidi Award for the most juiced of the evening. There were some decent choices here, but I thought Hogan stood out the most as far as, you know, the Bulldogs aren't here. They're our usual winners. I mean, Haynes is always in the conversation, as is Hercules, but I thought Hogan looked the biggest.
He always looked huge. Yeah. I mean, Hercules always has that jacked look. There really was nobody else that comes close. Yeah, I mean, nobody else does. It's got to go to Hogan.
Yep. All right. Our overall grade of the evening. This was a really good Saturday's main event. I enjoyed it. We've talked about it before. Some of the higher graded ones I've gone. I think a 7 is pretty much the highest I've gone on a Saturday's main event. And I thought this was fairly close. I don't think it was quite up to the best we've seen, but it has the awesome battle royal. Not too much downtime. Savage Steel is kind of blah. And, you know, Steamboat Sheik was okay, but I do think not mentioning 3 hurts it a little bit. It feels weird, you know, like everything just kind of felt weird about the way they were avoiding it. So I really enjoyed the show though, and I really, really liked the battle royal. So I went with a 6 on this, Scott, which I think is a pretty good grade considering it's, you know, it's not the best one we've seen.
Yeah, I would give this a 6 as well. It had a good, you know, the battle royal was huge. Savage being on it at all is good because we don't get to see Savage a lot. I feel like we didn't see him much toward the end of 86. He was at other shows when we're at the Garden. But I also it's also good to see the tag team champions. We've seen them twice now since they won it, and that's awesome. So everybody, all the big players were on, including Piper. Again, the matches were what they are. It's hard to grade. You know, there's not a lot of always great Saturday's main event matches just based because of time issues. Mm-hmm. So I give it a 6 as well. I thought it was pretty solid. I liked it a lot.
All right, that's it in the books. We're officially headed toward WrestleMania, but we do have one more stop on the road there. We are not quite there just yet, Scott. So next week, no show. We have some conflicts going on throughout the week. We'll be back on the 20th. That'll be Thanksgiving week for the very special build episode of WrestleMania 3. We're going to have Mr. John D'Amato, Mr. Kelly Nelson, and Pete Schermacher with us as we run through the build. We have some really nice treats, some old school stuff, and a lot of the we're going to talk about just what led up to the two top matches of WrestleMania, the Togan Andre, Savage Steamboat. We're going to cover all that with our 3 special guests just to really hype and also to save us some time when we cover 3 because, as you know, that's a pretty long show. So if we can get a lot of the build out of the way, we don't have to dive too much into it there. And that will be the week after with D'Amato on the 27th. We'll be talking WrestleMania 3. So those are your next couple of episodes across the next 3 weeks. And other than that, everyone check out PlayStation.com each and every day. PlayStation.com/Amazon. Do all of your holiday shopping with us. Check out our Vintage Vault or Refresh ebook series, all free. Click on the right-hand banner on PlayStation.com. Check out Jeff Learns Wrestling as well. You can sign up on our Facebook page, Facebook.com/Jeff Learns Wrestling. We had a new episode last week where we took a look at the main event from TLC 2017 just to kind of give Jeff a shot of what's going on these days. He had thoughts as to pretty much what you'd expect. But we're going to be back in 87, hopefully, for our next episode as we continue on the trek towards Survivor Series there. My newest ECW piece went up today, Scott. It was the arrival of Paulie Dangerously in Eastern Championship Wrestling from April of 93. So check that out each and every Monday. And anything you have going on?
We do have an episode of the main event coming up this week. We are going to have one of your good friends from Clotheslines and Headlines, JR, Mr. Brandon Howard, is going to join us to talk about the third quarter report that came out a couple weeks ago for WWE and talk about some financial stuff, like the big news that they will not be doing Starrcade on the network, which is somewhat perplexing. But talk about some other money numbers as well and And Bound for Glory was this past weekend, so I'm sure The Godfather will want to dive into that and much more. So check that out later this week.
All right. So we'll be back in 2 weeks' time looking at the build for WrestleMania 3. Until then, everyone avoid those headbutts and have a great night. Take care.